ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
Before the war, it was open, safe, and toll-free. Now, the Strait of Hormuz has become one of the biggest problems for Donald Trump as he tries to end the conflict. But while the global oil supply has been disrupted for months, petrol prices here are now as low as they were before the war began. Today, energy analyst Kevin Morrison on whether that can last. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Kevin, Donald Trump, when the prospect of a deal with Iran first emerged, he told the ships of the world to start your engines and let the oil flow. But clearly it's not really that easy, is it?
No. And there still seems to be a lot of nervousness around, because despite what Donald Trump has said, the Iranians have said that the Strait of Hormuz is actually closed. There's sort of conflicting accounts of what's really going on.
The initial US-Iran deal, which includes an end to the fighting in Lebanon, appears on the cusp of unravelling. Tehran once again declaring the Strait of Hormuz closed, even as Washington insists it's still open.
Our country's doing so well, those ships are flowing out of the Hormuz Strait like nobody's ever seen before, actually. There were a lot of them, about 700 of them, and they're pouring out. The oil is all over the place.
The US has said that the ships have passed, carrying about 17 million barrels of oil. So that's almost back to where we were before the conflict, wow, which was around 20 million barrels a day.
So when J.D. Vance, he flew off to Switzerland on the weekend for these talks with Iran, which didn't actually go that well,
no.
The Iranians, as you say, they had declared that they had closed the Strait of Hormuz again in response to Israeli attacks against Hezbollah in Lebanon. The Americans then contradicted them and said it was still open.
The opening of the Strait of Hormuz, the ending of the Iranian nuclear program, all of these things have already been accomplished. The question before us now is how much more can we accomplish together?
But it's just this huge uncertainty. It must be incredibly confusing for the shipping companies.
Yeah, absolutely. The shipping companies, and then in turn the insurers, and also the oil consumers, i.e. being the refineries, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region. So nobody quite knows what is going on. It is a very, very nervy time. The insurance companies, they've said they're still treating it as a conflict zone. Mm. And so, you know, it's not back to what they would consider a normal state of business.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump, according to a quote from Fox News, he's warned Iran, if it closes the strait, you won't have a country, so threatening to restart the bombing again. Now, as you say, there has been some ships getting through, though, we think. The US military says 55 ships travelled through the strait on Saturday alone. That is less than normal, but as you say, it looks like it's ramping up again.
Yeah, because before the conflict, it was around 90 vessels a day that travelled through the strait. So that's around 3,000 a month. You know, so obviously it's a very busy waterway. So we'll see like this initial rush. But what's going to take time is all those hundreds of ships that have been waiting outside the strait around the Sea of Oman to get in to load up, because, you know, that whole production supply chain does take a long time in getting back, because they've had to shut in oil fields, they've had to shut in gas fields, and you simply just can't flick a switch and expect them to turn back on immediately. Mm. So that all takes days and weeks before that whole process starts. And then with the shipping companies, they've got kind of form an orderly queue to get in and out, because it is a relatively narrow waterway. And now what seems to have emerged is that there seems to be two waterways, one where the Iranian ships go through and then the other where everybody else goes through.
Gosh, and I've even read actually that some of those ships that were stranded in the strait for all those months, they've got barnacles underneath them that need to be removed. Like, it's all logistically incredibly difficult at this point, not to mention that there is still a concern that there could be sea mites.
This is it. And then that's, again, coming back to the insurers. They don't want to insure a ship that could be blown up by a sea mine.
Yeah.
Again, there's conflicting information coming out from both sides. You know, how much is there, how long it will take to clear. You know, again, there's just different information coming out. So it's going to take some time before the mines are cleared.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's this issue, Kevin, of a toll or a fee. Now, Iran seemed to agree not to charge that during this 60 days of this initial ceasefire, but that is still very much a possibility, isn't it? And even now, Donald Trump saying, well, America will charge a toll if a firm deal isn't reached after these 60 days. Can Iran, or for that matter, America, actually do that?
It depends on how they term it, because I think if it's called a toll, I don't think they'd be allowed to do that. Particularly, again, sort of come back to the insurers, they would not be able to insure a ship that actually pays those tolls, because it would contravene the sanctions that are currently imposed on Iran. Mm. I mean, obviously, that's part of the negotiation over the next 60 days, what to do about those sanctions, you know, how they will be lifted, and, you know, to reintegrate Iran into the global economy. But pre the conflict, there was no tolls, there was no service fees, there was no charges to go through the straits. So it is a major change. And you know, this is another thing that's really emerged from this conflict. Iran now realizes it has another lever over the world economy, really.
All right, well, Kevin, let's consider now what all of this might mean for us. Now, motorists here could be forgiven for thinking it is situation normal, because the government has had this fuel excise relief in place. It's now extended that, of course, at a reduced rate until the start of August.
The federal government is halving its discount to the fuel excise after 3 months of relief for motorists.
The 50% cut that is currently in place, which knocked back prices by 32 cents a litre, will now drop back to 16 cents per litre between the 1st of July and the 2nd of August.
That has kept fuel prices here down, hasn't it? I mean, they've been looking pretty good, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think what the government has done by extending the fuel excise but halving the amount of the excise is prudent, because we've seen oil prices come down here. And so by reducing the rate of the excise cut, motorists won't sort of feel the pain so much. There's also other things that have got to be considered. I mean, it's an issue for the budget, because the government receives a lot of income from the fuel excise, and much more than what it receives from gas companies paying, you know, tax through the petroleum resource rent tax. So I think that they've kind of done the right thing here.
But I've seen in recent times that we're actually paying less for fuel now than we were before the war, which seems pretty incredible. Given what we're seeing in the Strait.
Yeah, I mean, that's more on petrol. I think with diesel, diesel prices were hit much harder than gasoline prices. Mm. And that's largely reflection that the type of oil that comes out from the Persian Gulf is actually more suited to making diesel. And that's why we saw diesel and jet fuel prices rise much more than petrol prices.
Just tell me then, once the cut to the fuel excise is gone, what can we all expect, that is petrol users as well? Presuming, first of all, the best case scenario, which is the strait is fully open,
yeah,
what should we expect?
Well, I think, as you said, particularly on petrol prices, that we've seen a lot of those increases in the petrol price being eroded. So if there is any further price fall, it's going to be quite limited. I think we've seen the bulk of the fall so far. But whereas for diesel, those prices probably will start to come down as we see more consistent flows of that type of oil that's used for making diesel. And this is on the assumption there isn't an agreement and oil starts flowing. Otherwise, if we're back to hostilities, then that's going to put upward pressure on prices.
Yeah, there's still big ifs here. So just tell me then the counter to that, the strait remains closed or it fluctuates between being open and being closed. What happens then?
Well, then, yeah, the fear premium is put back on international oil prices. So we could see the Brent crude price go up again. At the beginning of the conflict, people were saying, look, oil prices could go up to over $150 or $200 a barrel. That never quite happened. And one of the reasons why it didn't happen was a lot of the consuming countries like China and Japan, they dipped into their considerable reserves. And also we had a big release of stockpiles coordinated by the International Energy Agency. So that combination of release of stockpiles and plus China and Japan dipping into their own, that helped cushion the supply gap. But if the strait was to be closed again, that option of a further large stock release, particularly coordinated by the IEA, really that's kind of off the table. We've already expended that option. Mm. So, it will be quite precarious.
Yeah, and we'd need to what now really be concentrating on rebuilding our reserves? How long does that take?
Yeah, every country will now want to build a reserve, and particularly Australia will. We saw the government allocate funding for new storage capacity in the budget.
Australia's emergency fuel reserves will be boosted to 50 days.
A $10 billion plan to guard against the unpredictable. It includes $7.5 billion for loans for fuel companies to help them boost fuel and fertiliser supply, and $3.2 billion to establish a government-owned diesel and jet fuel reserve to tap into during a crisis.
Really, before we were kind of just doing it in a just-in-time basis where, it was more about market efficiency, because obviously if you have lots of storage capacity, that obviously costs money, and then that cost is passed on to the consumer. So Australian motorists have actually been quite fortunate. Relative to the other developed countries in the world, Australia pays amongst the lowest amount for petrol. It's only the US and Canada that actually sort of on average pays less than Australia. But both those countries are exporters, whereas Australia is completely reliant on imports. Mm. So if we start spending this $10 billion on extra storage capacity, that cost is going to eventually be passed on to consumers. So overall, the average price of fuel should increase.
So, Kevin, as we discussed, Iran took control of this waterway, the Strait of Hormuz, at the beginning of the war, and it now appears to have some leverage over it, to put it mildly. So what do you think? Will we ever see the return to pre-war conditions, or really has this waterway and the passage of tankers through it changed forever?
Well, I think it certainly changed. Whether it's changed forever, I mean, it would require a very comprehensive peace agreement, and that would have to include more than just the US and Iran, because obviously this recent closure was due to exchange of fire between Israel and Hezbollah. So that would have to be sort of tied down. At the moment, it's not, and that's why it's a bit loose, and that's why this whole agreement looks quite fragile.
Yeah.
How long that's going to take, I could only guess.
Is it possible at all, Kevin, that the world could adapt to a new normal, that there'd be a way around these disruptions in the future? Can we avoid the strait, basically, is what I'm asking, or is it impossible?
No, I think it will. I mean, one thing it's certainly going to do is encourage more electric vehicle sales, because motorists will feel, well, look, I don't really want to put up with this anymore. Why would I have to be concerned about sharp rises in my fuel price, which will affect the household budget, when, we're seeing cheaper models of EVs come onto the market, and we don't have to deal with volatile areas anymore. So that's one thing. The second, what I said earlier about the construction of more pipeline capacity, we may see more of that. So there will be reduced traffic flow going through. And also what has emerged with the increased supplies elsewhere. So the world will be less dependent on oil coming out the Persian Gulf than it was in the past. So because obviously no shipping company is happy about this, so the world will adjust. And so ultimately, given Iran's dependence on oil exports, it could come back to bite them in the very long term. Mm. And their economy is not in any great shape whatsoever.
No.
They're very dependent on oil exports.
So it seems like the future of the global oil market, from what you're saying, is a little shaky.
It is shaky, but I must add, it's going to take a long time to replace that 20 million barrels. You know, it's not going to be done overnight with F1 buying EV vehicles. So it's going to be slow, but all those things are going to be incremental and eventually it will start to bite at some stage. I think really the days of, you know, having sort of cheap oil for Australia, those days are numbered, particularly if we spend all this money on storage capacity, which I think we will have to do because, you know, we've really got away with it. You know, this has really woken us up.
Kevin Morrison is an analyst from the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.